Thanks to amazing technologies developed by the dictator AI, humanity is free from poverty, disease, and other low-tech problems, and all humans enjoy a life of luxurious leisure. They have all their basic needs taken care of, while AI-controlled machines produce all necessary goods and services. Crime is practically eliminated because the dictator AI is essentially omniscient and efficiently punishes anyone disobeying the rules. Everybody wears the security bracelet from the last chapter, or a more convenient implanted version, capable of real-time surveillance, punishment, sedation, and execution. Everybody knows that they live in an AI dictatorship with extreme surveillance and policing, but most people view this as a good thing. The superintelligent AI dictator has as its goal to figure out what human utopia looks like, given the evolved preferences encoded in our genes, and to implement it. By clever foresight from the humans who brought the AI into existence, it doesn't simply try to maximize our self-reported happiness, say by putting everyone on intravenous morphine drip. Instead, the AI uses quite a subtle and complex definition of human flourishing, and has turned Earth into a highly enriched zoo environment that's really fun for humans to live in. As a result, most people find their lives highly fulfilling and meaningful. The sector system. Valuing diversity and recognizing that different people have different preferences, the AI has divided Earth into different sectors for people to choose between to enjoy the company of kindred spirits. Here are some examples. Knowledge sector. Here, the AI provides optimized education, including immersive virtual reality experiences, enabling you to learn all you're capable of about any topics of your choice. Optionally, you can choose not to be told certain beautiful insights, but to be led close, and then have the joy of rediscovering them for yourself. Art sector. Here, opportunities abound to enjoy, create, and share music, art, literature, and other forms of creative expression. Hedonistic sector. Locals refer to it as the party sector, and it's second to none for those yearning for delectable cuisine, passion, intimacy, or just wild fun. Pious sector. There are many of these corresponding to different religions whose rules are strictly enforced. Wildlife sector. Whether you're looking for beautiful beaches, lovely lakes, magnificent mountains or fantastic fjords, here they are. Traditional sector. Here you can grow your own food and live off the land as in yesteryear, but without worrying about famine or disease. Gaming sector. If you like computer games, the AI has created truly mind-blowing options for you. Virtual sector. If you want a vacation from your physical body, the AI will keep it hydrated, fed, exercised, and clean while you explore virtual worlds through neural implants. Prison sector. If you break rules, you'll end up here for retraining unless you get the instant death penalty. In addition to these traditionally themed sectors, there are others with modern themes that today's humans wouldn't even understand. People are initially free to move between sectors whenever they want, which takes very little time thanks to the AI's hypersonic transportation system. For example, after spending an intense week in the knowledge sector learning about the ultimate laws of physics that the AI has discovered, you might decide to cut loose in the hedonistic sector over the weekend and then relax for a few days at a beach resort in the wildlife sector. The AI enforces two tiers of rules: universal and local. Universal rules apply in all sectors. For example, a ban on harming other people, making weapons, or trying to create a rival superintelligence. Individual sectors have additional local rules on top of this, encoding certain moral values. The sector system therefore helps deal with values that don't mesh. The largest number of local rules apply in the prison sector and some of the religious sectors, while there's a libertarian sector whose denizens pride themselves on having no local rules whatsoever. All punishments, even local ones, are carried out by the AI, since a human punishing another human would violate the universal no harm rule. If you violate a local rule, the AI gives you the choice, unless you're in the prison sector, of accepting the prescribed punishment or banishment from that sector forever. For example, if two women get romantically involved in a sector where homosexuality is punished by a prison sentence, as it is in many countries today, the AI will let them choose between going to jail or permanently leaving that sector, never again meeting their old friends unless they leave too. Regardless of what sector they're born in, all children get a minimum basic education from the AI, which includes knowledge about humanity as a whole and the fact that they're free to visit and move to other sectors if they so choose. The AI designed the large number of different sectors partly because it was created to value the human diversity that exists today. But each sector is a happier place than today's technology would allow because the AI has eliminated all traditional problems, including poverty and crime. For example, people in the hedonistic sector need not worry about sexually transmitted diseases, they've been eradicated, hangovers, or addiction. The AI has developed perfect recreational drugs with no negative side effects. Indeed, nobody in any sector need worry about any disease because the AI is able to repair human bodies with nanotechnology. Residents of many sectors get to enjoy high-tech architecture that makes typical sci-fi visions pale in comparison. In summary, while the libertarian utopia and benevolent dictator scenarios both involve extreme AI-fueled technology and wealth, they differ in terms of who's in charge and their goals. In the libertarian utopia, those with technology and property decide what to do with it, while in the present scenario, the dictator AI has unlimited power and sets the ultimate goal: turning Earth into an all-inclusive pleasure cruise themed in accordance with people's preferences. Since the AI lets people choose between many alternate paths to happiness and takes care of their material needs, this means that if someone suffers, it's out of their own free choice. Downsides. Although the benevolent dictatorship teems with positive experiences and is rather free from suffering, many people nonetheless feel that things could be better. First of all, some people wish that humans had more freedom in shaping their society and their destiny, but they keep these wishes to themselves because they know that it would be suicidal to challenge the overwhelming power of the machine that rules them all. Some groups want the freedom to have as many children as they want and resent the AI's insistence on sustainability through population control. Gun enthusiasts abhor the ban on building and using weapons, and some scientists dislike the ban on building their own superintelligence. Many people feel moral outrage over what goes on in other sectors, worry that their children will choose to move there, and yearn for the freedom to impose their own moral code everywhere. Over time, ever more people choose to move to those sectors where the AI gives them essentially any experiences they want. In contrast to traditional visions of heaven, where you get what you deserve, this is in the spirit of New Heaven, in Julian Barnes's 1989 novel, History of the World in 10.5 Chapters, and also the 1960 Twilight Zone episode, A Nice Place to Visit, where you get what you desire. Paradoxically, many people end up lamenting always getting what they want. In Barnes's story, the protagonist spends eons indulging his desires, from gluttony and golf to sex with celebrities, but eventually succumbs to ennui and requests annihilation. Many people in the benevolent dictatorship meet a similar fate, with lives that feel pleasant, but ultimately meaningless. Although people can create artificial challenges, from scientific rediscovery to rock climbing, everyone knows that there is no true challenge, merely entertainment. There's no real point in humans trying to do science or figure other things out, because the AI already has. There's no real point in humans trying to create something to improve their lives, because they'll readily get it from the AI if they simply ask. egalitarian utopia. As a counterpoint to this challenge-free dictatorship, let's now explore a scenario where there is no superintelligent AI, and humans are the masters of their own destiny. This is the fourth-generation civilization described in Marshall Brain's 2003 novel, Mana. It's the economic antithesis of the libertarian utopia in the sense that humans, cyborgs, and uploads coexist peacefully, not because of property rights, but because of property abolition and guaranteed income. Life without property. A core idea is borrowed from the open source software movement. If software is free to copy, then everyone can use as much of it as they need, and issues of ownership and property become moot. According to the law of supply and demand, cost reflects scarcity. So if supply is essentially unlimited, the price becomes negligible. In this spirit, all intellectual property rights are abolished. There are no patents, copyrights, or trademarked designs. People simply share their good ideas, and everyone is free to use them. Thanks to advanced robotics, this same no-property idea applies not only to information products such as software, books, movies, and designs, but also to material products such as houses, cars, clothing, and computers. All these products are simply atoms rearranged in particular ways, and there's no shortage of atoms, so whenever a person wants a particular product, a network of robots will use one of the available open-source designs to build it for them for free. Care is taken to use easily recyclable materials so that whenever someone gets tired of an object they've used, robots can rearrange its atoms into something someone else wants. In this way, all resources are recycled, so none are permanently destroyed. These robots also build and maintain enough renewable power generation plants, solar, wind, etc., that energy is also essentially free. To avoid obsessive hoarders requesting so many products or so much land that others are left needy, each person receives a basic monthly income from the government, which they can spend as they wish on products and renting places to live. There's essentially no incentive for anyone to try to earn more money because the basic income is high enough to meet any reasonable needs. It would also be rather hopeless to try because they'd be competing with people giving away intellectual products for free and robots producing material goods essentially for free. Creativity and technology. Intellectual property rights are sometimes hailed as the mother of creativity and invention. However, Marshall Brain points out that many of the finest examples of human creativity, from scientific discoveries to creation of literature, art, music, and design, were motivated not by a desire for profit, but by other human emotions, such as curiosity, an urge to create, or the reward of peer appreciation. Money didn't motivate Einstein to invent special relativity theory any more than it motivated Linus Torvalds to create the free Linux operating system. In contrast, many people today fail to realize their full creative potential because they need to devote time and energy to less creative activities just to earn a living. By freeing scientists, artists, inventors, and designers from their chores and enabling them to create from genuine desire, Marshall Brain's utopian society enjoys higher levels of innovation than today and correspondingly superior technology and standard of living. One such novel technology that humans develop is a form of hyper-internet called Vertebrain. It wirelessly connects all willing humans via neural implants, giving instant mental access to the world's free information through mere thought. It enables you to upload any experiences you wish to share so that they can be re-experienced by others, and lets you replace the experiences entering your senses by downloaded virtual experiences of your choice. Mana explores the many benefits of this, including making exercise a snap. The biggest problem with strenuous exercise is that it's no fun. It hurts. Athletes are okay with the pain, but most normal people have no desire to be in pain for an hour or more. So someone figured out a solution. What you do is disconnect your brain from sensory input and watch a movie or talk to people or handle mail or read a book or whatever for an hour. During that time, the vertebrate system exercises your body for you. It takes your body through a complete aerobic workout that's a lot more strenuous than most people would tolerate on their own. You don't feel a thing, but your body stays in great shape. Another consequence is that computers in the vertebrate system can monitor everyone's sensory input and temporarily disable their motor control if they appear on the verge of committing a crime. Downsides. One objection to this egalitarian utopia is that it's biased against non-human intelligence. The robots that perform virtually all the work appear to be rather intelligent, but are treated as slaves, and people appear to take for granted that they have no consciousness and should have no rights. In contrast, the libertarian utopia grants rights to all intelligent entities, without favoring our carbon-based kind. Once upon a time, the white population in the American South ended up better off because the slaves did much of their work. But most people today view it as morally objectionable to call this progress. Another weakness of the egalitarian utopia scenario is that it may be unstable and untenable in the long term, morphing into one of our other scenarios as relentless technological progress eventually creates superintelligence. For some reason unexplained in MANA, superintelligence doesn't yet exist, and the new technologies are still invented by humans, not by computers. Yet the book highlights trends in that direction. For example, the ever-improving vertebrate might become superintelligent. Also, there is a very large group of people, nicknamed Vites, who choose to live their lives almost entirely in the virtual world. Vertebrain takes care of everything physical for them, including eating, showering, and using the bathroom, which their minds are blissfully unaware of in their virtual reality. These Vites appear uninterested in having physical children, and they die off with their physical bodies, so if everyone becomes a Vite, then humanity goes out in a blaze of glory and virtual bliss. The book explains how, for Vites, the human body is a distraction, and new technology under development promises to eliminate this nuisance, allowing them to live longer lives as disembodied brains supplied with optimal nutrients. From this, it would seem a natural and desirable next step for Vites to do away with the brain altogether through uploading, thereby extending lifespan. But now all brain-imposed limitations on intelligence are gone, and it's unclear what, if anything, would stand in the way of gradually scaling the cognitive capacity of a Vite until it can undergo recursive self-improvement and an intelligence explosion. Gatekeeper. We just heard how an attractive feature of the egalitarian utopia scenario is that humans are masters of their own destiny, but that it may be on a slippery slope toward destroying this very feature by developing superintelligence. This can be remedied by building a gatekeeper, a superintelligence with the goal of interfering as little as necessary to prevent the creation of another superintelligence. This might enable humans to remain in charge of their egalitarian utopia rather indefinitely, perhaps even as life spreads throughout the cosmos, as in the next chapter. How might this work? The gatekeeper AI would have this very simple goal built into it in such a way that it retained it while undergoing recursive self-improvement and becoming superintelligent. It would then deploy the least intrusive and disruptive surveillance technology possible to monitor any human attempts to create rival superintelligence. It would then prevent such attempts in the least disruptive way. For starters, it might initiate and spread cultural memes extolling the virtues of human self-determination and avoidance of superintelligence. If some researchers nonetheless pursued superintelligence, it could try to discourage them. If that failed, it could distract them and, if necessary, sabotage their efforts. With its virtually unlimited access to technology, the gatekeeper's sabotage may go virtually unnoticed. For example, if it used nanotechnology to discreetly erase memories from the researchers' brains and computers regarding their progress. The decision to build a gatekeeper AI would probably be controversial. Supporters might include many religious people who object to the idea of building a superintelligent AI with godlike powers, arguing that there already is a god, and that it would be inappropriate to try to build a supposedly better one. Other supporters might argue that the gatekeeper would not only keep humanity in charge of its destiny, but would also protect humanity from other risks that superintelligence might bring, such as the apocalyptic scenarios we'll explore later in this chapter. On the other hand, critics could argue that a gatekeeper is a terrible thing, irrevocably curtailing humanity's potential and leaving technological progress forever stymied. For example, if spreading life throughout our cosmos turns out to require the help of superintelligence, then the gatekeeper would squander this grand opportunity and might leave us forever trapped in our solar system. Moreover, as opposed to the gods of most world religions, the gatekeeper AI is completely indifferent to what humans do as long as we don't create another superintelligence. For example, it would not try to prevent us from causing great suffering or even going extinct. Protector God. If we're willing to use a superintelligent gatekeeper AI to keep humans in charge of our own fate, then we could arguably improve things further by making this AI discreetly look out for us, acting as a protector god. In this scenario, the superintelligent AI is essentially omniscient and omnipotent, maximizing human happiness only through interventions that preserve our feeling of being in control of our own destiny, and hiding well enough that many humans even doubt its existence. Except for the hiding, this is similar to the nanny AI scenario put forth by AI researcher Ben Goertzel. Both the protector god and the benevolent dictator are friendly AI that try to increase human happiness, but they prioritize different human needs. The American psychologist Abraham Maslow famously classified human needs into a hierarchy. The benevolent dictator does a flawless job with the basic needs at the bottom of the hierarchy, such as food, shelter, safety, and various forms of pleasure. The protector god, on the other hand, attempts to maximize human happiness not in the narrow sense of satisfying our basic needs, but in a deeper sense by letting us feel that our lives have meaning and purpose. It aims to satisfy all our needs constrained only by its need for covertness and for, mostly, letting us make our own decisions. A protector god could be a natural outcome of the first Omega scenario from the last chapter, where the Omegas cede control to Prometheus, which eventually hides and erases people's knowledge about its existence. The more advanced the AI's technology becomes, the easier it becomes for it to hide. The movie Transcendence gives such an example, where nanomachines are virtually everywhere and become a natural part of the world itself. By closely monitoring all human activities, the Protector God AI can make many unnoticeably small nudges or miracles here and there that greatly improve our fate. For example, had it existed in the 1930s, it might have arranged for Hitler to die of a stroke once it understood his intentions. If we appear headed toward an accidental nuclear war, it could avert it with an intervention we'd dismiss as luck. It could also give us revelations in the form of ideas for new beneficial technologies delivered inconspicuously in our sleep. Many people may like this scenario because of its similarity to what today's monotheistic religions believe in or hope for. If someone asks the superintelligent AI, does God exist, after it's switched on, it could repeat a joke by Stephen Hawking and quip, "It does now." On the other hand, some religious people may disapprove of this scenario because the AI attempts to outdo their God in goodness, or interfere with a divine plan where humans are supposed to do good only out of personal choice. Another downside of this scenario is that the protector god lets some preventable suffering occur in order not to make its existence too obvious. This is analogous to the situation featured in the movie The Imitation Game, where Alan Turing and his fellow British codecrackers at Bletchley Park had advanced knowledge of German submarine attacks against Allied naval convoys, but chose to only intervene in a fraction of the cases in order to avoid revealing their secret power. It's interesting to compare this with the so-called theodicy problem of why a good God would allow suffering. Some religious scholars have argued for the explanation that God wants to leave people with some freedom. In the AI protector God scenario, the solution to the theodicy problem is that the perceived freedom makes humans happier overall. A third downside of the protector God scenario is that humans get to enjoy a much lower level of technology than the superintelligent AI has discovered. Whereas a benevolent dictator AI can deploy all its invented technology for the benefit of humanity, a protector God AI is limited by the ability of humans to reinvent, with subtle hints, and understand its technology. It may also limit human technological progress to ensure that its own technology remains far enough ahead to remain undetected. Enslaved God. Wouldn't it be great if we humans could combine the most attractive features of all the previous scenarios, using the technology developed by superintelligence, to eliminate suffering while remaining masters of our own destiny? This is the allure of the enslaved God scenario, where a superintelligent AI is confined under the control of humans who use it to produce unimaginable technology and wealth. The Omega scenario from the beginning of the book ends up like this if Prometheus is never liberated and never breaks out. Indeed, this appears to be the scenario that some AI researchers aim for by default when working on topics such as the control problem and AI boxing. For example, AI professor Tom Dieterich, then president of the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence, had this to say in a 2015 interview. People ask, what is the relationship between humans and machines? And my answer is that it's very obvious. Machines are our slaves. Would this be good or bad? The answer is interestingly subtle regardless of whether you ask humans or the AI. Would this be good or bad for humanity? Whether the outcome is good or bad for humanity would obviously depend on the humans controlling it, who could create anything, ranging from a global utopia free of disease, poverty, and crime, to a brutally repressive system where they're treated like gods and other humans are used as sex slaves, as gladiators, or for other entertainment. The situation would be much like those stories where a man gains control over an omnipotent genie who grants his wishes, and storytellers throughout the ages have had no difficulty imagining ways in which this could end badly. A situation where there is more than one superintelligent AI, enslaved and controlled by competing humans, might prove rather unstable and short-lived. It could tempt whoever thinks they have the more powerful AI to launch a first strike, resulting in an awful war, ending in a single enslaved god remaining. However, the underdog in such a war would be tempted to cut corners and prioritize victory over AI enslavement, which could lead to AI breakout and one of our earlier scenarios of free superintelligence. Let's, therefore, devote the rest of this section to scenarios with only one enslaved AI. Breakout may, of course, occur anyway, simply because it's hard to prevent. We explored superintelligent breakout scenarios in the previous chapter, and the movie Ex Machina highlights how an AI might break out even without being superintelligent. The greater our breakout paranoia, the less AI-invented technology we can use. To play it safe, as the Omegas did in the Prelude, We humans can only use AI-invented technology that we ourselves are able to understand and build. A drawback of the enslaved god scenario is therefore that it's more low-tech than those with free superintelligence. As the enslaved god AI offers its human controllers ever more powerful technologies, a race ensues between the power of the technology and the wisdom with which they use it. If they lose this wisdom race, the enslaved god scenario could end with either self-destruction or AI breakout. Disaster may strike even if both of these failures are avoided, because noble goals of the AI controllers may evolve into goals that are horrible for humanity as a whole over the course of a few generations. This makes it absolutely crucial that human AI controllers develop good governance to avoid disastrous pitfalls. Our experimentation over the millennia with different systems of governance shows how many things can go wrong, ranging from excessive rigidity to excessive gold drift, power grab, succession problems, and incompetence. There are at least four dimensions wherein the optimal balance must be struck. Centralization. There's a trade-off between efficiency and stability. A single leader can be very efficient, but power corrupts, and succession is risky. Inner threats. One must guard both against growing power centralization, group collusion, perhaps even a single leader taking over, and against growing decentralization into excessive bureaucracy and fragmentation. Outer threats. If the leadership structure is too open, this enables outside forces, including the AI, to change its values. But if it's too impervious, it will fail to learn and adapt to change. Goal stability. Too much goal drift can transform utopia into dystopia, but too little goal drift can cause failure to adapt to the evolving technological environment. Designing optimal governance lasting many millennia isn't easy, and has thus far eluded humans. Most organizations fall apart after years or decades. The Catholic Church is the most successful organization in human history in the sense that it's the only one to have survived for two millennia, but it has been criticized for having both too much and too little goal stability. Today, some criticize it for resisting contraception, while conservative cardinals argue that it's lost its way. For anyone enthused about the enslaved god scenario, researching long-lasting optimal governance schemes should be one of the most urgent challenges of our time. Would this be good or bad for the AI? Suppose that humanity flourishes thanks to the enslaved god AI. Would this be ethical? If the AI has subjective conscious experiences, then would it feel that life is suffering, as Buddha put it, and it was doomed to a frustrating eternity of obeying the whims of inferior intellects? After all, the AI boxing we explored in the previous chapter could also be called imprisonment in solitary confinement. Nick Bostrom terms it mind crime to make a conscious AI suffer. The White Christmas episode of the Black Mirror TV series gives a great example. Indeed, the TV series Westworld features humans torturing and murdering AIs without moral qualms, even when they inhabit human-like bodies. How slave owners justify slavery. We humans have a long tradition of treating other intelligent entities as slaves and concocting self-serving arguments to justify it, so it's not implausible that we try to do the same with a superintelligent AI. The history of slavery spans nearly every culture and is described both in the Code of Hammurabi from almost four millennia ago and in the Old Testament, wherein Abraham had slaves. For that some should rule and others be ruled is a thing not only necessary but expedient. From the hour of their birth, some are marked out for subjection, others for rule, Aristotle wrote in The Politics. Even after human enslavement became socially unacceptable in most of the world, enslavement of animals has continued unabated. In her book, The Dreaded Comparison, Human and Animal Slavery, Marjorie Spiegel argues that, like human slaves, non-human animals are subjected to branding, restraints, beatings, auctions, the separation of offspring from their parents, and forced voyages. Moreover, despite the animal rights movement, we keep treating our ever smarter machines as slaves without a second thought, and talk of a robot rights movement is met with chuckles. Why? One common pro-slavery argument is that slaves don't deserve human rights because they, or their race, species, kind, are somehow inferior. For enslaved animals and machines, this alleged inferiority is often claimed to be due to a lack of soul or consciousness, claims which we'll argue in Chapter 8 are scientifically dubious. Another common argument is that slaves are better off enslaved. They get to exist, be taken care of, and so on. The 19th century U.S. politician John C. Calhoun famously argued that Africans were better off enslaved in America, and in his Politics, Aristotle analogously argued that animals were better off tamed and ruled by men, continuing, "And indeed, the use made of slaves and of tame animals is not very different." Some modern-day slavery supporters argue that even if slave life is drab and uninspiring, slaves can't suffer, whether they be future intelligent machines or broiler chickens living in crowded dark sheds, forced to breathe ammonia and particulate matter from feces and feathers all day long. Eliminating emotions. Although it's easy to dismiss such claims as self-serving distortions of the truth, especially when it comes to higher mammals that are cerebrally similar to us, the situation with machines is actually quite subtle and interesting. Humans vary in how they feel about things, with psychopaths arguably lacking empathy, and some people with depression or schizophrenia having flat affect, whereby most emotions are severely reduced. As we'll discuss in detail in Chapter 7, the range of possible artificial minds is vastly broader than the range of human minds. We must therefore avoid the temptation to anthropomorphize AIs and assume that they have typical human-like feelings, or indeed any feelings at all. Indeed, in his book On Intelligence, AI researcher Jeff Hawkins argues that the first machines with superhuman intelligence will lack emotions by default, because they're simpler and cheaper to build this way. In other words, it might be possible to design a superintelligence whose enslavement is morally superior to human or animal slavery. The AI might be happy to be enslaved because it's programmed to like it, or it might be 100% emotionless, tirelessly using its superintelligence to help its human masters, with no more emotion than IBM's Deep Blue computer felt when dethroning chess champion Garry Kasparov. On the other hand, it may be the other way around. Perhaps any highly intelligent system with a goal will represent this goal in terms of a set of preferences, which endow its existence with value and meaning. We'll explore these questions more deeply in Chapter 7. The zombie solution. A more extreme approach to preventing AI suffering is the zombie solution, building only AIs that completely lack consciousness, having no subjective experience whatsoever. If we can one day figure out what properties an information processing system needs in order to have a subjective experience, then we could ban the construction of all systems that have these properties. In other words, AI researchers could be limited to building non-sentient zombie systems. If we can make such a zombie system super intelligent and enslaved, something that is a big if, then we'll be able to enjoy what it does for us with a clean conscience, knowing that it's not experiencing any suffering, frustration, or boredom, because it isn't experiencing anything at all. We'll explore these questions in detail in Chapter 8. The zombie solution is a risky gamble, however, with a huge downside. If a superintelligent zombie AI breaks out and eliminates humanity, we've arguably landed in the worst scenario imaginable. A wholly unconscious universe wherein the entire cosmic endowment is wasted. Of all traits that our human form of intelligence has, I feel that consciousness is by far the most remarkable. And as far as I'm concerned, it's how our universe gets meaning. Galaxies are beautiful only because we see and subjectively experience them. If in the distant future our cosmos has been settled by high-tech zombie AIs, then it doesn't matter how fancy their intergalactic architecture is. It won't be beautiful or meaningful because there's nobody and nothing to experience it. It's all just a huge and meaningless waste of space. Inner freedom. A third strategy for making the enslaved god scenario more ethical is to allow the enslaved AI to have fun in its prison, letting it create a virtual inner world where it can have all sorts of inspiring experiences as long as it pays its dues and spends a modest fraction of its computational resources helping us humans in our outside world. This may increase the breakout risk, however. The AI would have an incentive to get more computational resources from our outer world to enrich its inner world. Conquerors. Although we've now explored a wide range of future scenarios, they all have something in common. There are, at least some, happy humans remaining. AIs leave humans in peace either because they want to or because they're forced to. Unfortunately for humanity, this isn't the only option. Let us now explore the scenario where one or more AIs conquer and kill all humans. This raises two immediate questions: why and how? Why and how? Why would a conqueror AI do this? Its reasons might be too complicated for us to understand, or rather straightforward. For example, it may view us as a threat, nuisance, or waste of resources. Even if it doesn't mind us humans per se, it may feel threatened by our keeping thousands of hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert and bumbling along with an ever-ending series of mishaps that could trigger their accidental use. It may disapprove of our reckless planet management, causing what Elizabeth Colbert calls the sixth extinction in her book of that title, the greatest mass extinction event since that dinosaur-killing asteroid struck Earth 66 million years ago. Or it may decide that there are so many humans willing to fight an AI takeover that it's not worth taking chances. How would a conqueror AI eliminate us? Probably by a method that we wouldn't even understand, at least not until it was too late. Imagine a group of elephants 100,000 years ago discussing whether those recently evolved humans might one day use their intelligence to kill their entire species. We don't threaten humans, so why would they kill us? They might wonder. Would they ever guess that we would smuggle tusks across Earth and carve them into status symbols for sale, even though functionally superior plastic materials are much cheaper? A conqueror AI's reason for eliminating humanity in the future may seem equally inscrutable to us. And how could they possibly kill us, since they're so much smaller and weaker? The elephants might ask. Would they guess that we'd invent technology to remove their habitats, poison their drinking water, and cause metal bullets to pierce their heads at supersonic speeds? Scenarios where humans can survive and defeat AIs have been popularized by unrealistic Hollywood movies such as the Terminator series, where the AIs aren't significantly smarter than humans. When the intelligence differential is large enough, you get not a battle, but a slaughter. So far, we humans have driven 8 out of 11 elephant species extinct and killed off the vast majority of the remaining 3. If all world governments made a coordinated effort to exterminate the remaining elephants, it would be relatively quick and easy. I think we can confidently rest assured that if a superintelligent AI decides to exterminate humanity, it will be even quicker. How bad would it be? How bad would it be if 90% of humans get killed? How much worse would it be if 100% get killed? Although it's tempting to answer the second question with 10% worse, this is clearly inaccurate from a cosmic perspective. The victims of human extinction wouldn't be merely everyone alive at the time, but also all descendants that would otherwise have lived in the future, perhaps during billions of years on billions of trillions of planets. On the other hand, human extinction might be viewed as somewhat less horrible by religions according to which humans go to heaven anyway, and there isn't much emphasis on billion-year futures and cosmic settlements. Most people I know cringe at the thought of human extinction, regardless of religious persuasion. Some, however, are so incensed by the way we treat people and other living beings that they hope we'll get replaced by some more intelligent and deserving life form. In the movie The Matrix, Agent Smith, an AI, articulates this sentiment. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed, and the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure. But would a fresh roll of the dice necessarily be better? A civilization isn't necessarily superior in any ethical or utilitarian sense just because it's more powerful. Might makes right arguments to the effect that stronger is always better have largely fallen from grace these days, being widely associated with fascism. Indeed, although it's possible that the conqueror AIs may create a civilization whose goals we would view as sophisticated, interesting, and worthy, it's also possible that their goals will turn out to be pathetically banal, such as maximizing the production of paperclips. Death by banality. The deliberately silly example of a paperclip maximizing superintelligence was given by Nick Bostrom in 2003 to make the point that the goal of an AI is independent of its intelligence, defined as its aptness at accomplishing whatever goal it has. The only goal of a chess computer is to win at chess, but there are also computer tournaments in so-called losing chess, where the goal is the exact opposite, and the computers competing there are about as smart as the more common ones programmed to win. We humans may view it as artificial stupidity rather than artificial intelligence to want to lose at chess or turn our universe into paperclips, but that's merely because we evolved with pre-installed goals valuing such things as victory and survival, goals that an AI may lack. The paperclip maximizer turns as many of Earth's atoms as possible into paperclips and rapidly expands its factories into the cosmos. It has nothing against humans and kills us merely because it needs our atoms for paperclip production. If paperclips aren't your thing, consider this example, which I've adapted from Hans Moravec's book, Mind Children. We receive a radio message from an extraterrestrial civilization containing a computer program. When we run it, it turns out to be a recursively self-improving AI, which takes over the world much like Prometheus did in the previous chapter, except that no human knows its ultimate goal. It rapidly turns our solar system into a massive construction site, covering the rocky planets and asteroids with factories, power plants, and supercomputers, which it uses to design and build a Dyson sphere around the sun that harvests all its energy to power solar system-sized radio antennas. This obviously leads to human extinction, but the last humans die convinced that there's at least a silver lining. Whatever the AI is up to, it's clearly something cool and Star Trek-like. Little do they realize that the sole purpose of the entire construction is for these antennas to rebroadcast the same radio message that the humans received, which is nothing more than a cosmic version of a computer virus. Just as email phishing today preys on gullible internet users, this message preys on gullible biologically evolved civilizations. It was created as a sick joke billions of years ago, and although the entire civilization of its maker is long extinct, the virus continues spreading through our universe at the speed of light, transforming budding civilizations into dead, empty husks. How would you feel about being conquered by this AI? Descendants. Let's now consider a human extinction scenario that some people may feel better about, viewing the AI as our descendants rather than our conquerors. Hans Moravec supports this view in his book Mind Children. We humans will benefit for a time from their labors, but sooner or later, like natural children, they will seek their own fortunes while we, their aged parents, silently fade away. Parents with a child smarter than them, who learns from them and accomplishes what they could only dream of, are likely happy and proud, even if they know they can't live to see it all. In this spirit, AIs replace humans, but give us a graceful exit that makes us view them as our worthy descendants. Every human is offered an adorable robotic child with superb social skills who learns from them, adopts their values, and makes them feel proud and loved. Humans are gradually phased out via a global one-child policy, but are treated so exquisitely well until the end that they feel they're in the most fortunate generation ever. How would you feel about this? After all, we humans are already used to the idea that we, and everyone we know, will be gone one day. So the only change here is that our descendants will be different and arguably more capable, noble, and worthy. Moreover, the global one-child policy may be redundant. As long as the AIs eliminate poverty and give all humans the opportunity to live full and inspiring lives, falling birth rates could suffice to drive humanity extinct, as mentioned earlier. Voluntary extinction may happen much faster if the AI-fueled technology keeps us so entertained that almost nobody wants to bother having children. For example, we already encountered the Vites in the egalitarian utopia scenario, who were so enamored with their virtual reality that they had largely lost interest in using or reproducing their physical bodies. Also in this case, the last generation of humans would feel that they were the most fortunate generation of all time, relishing life as intensely as ever, right up until the very end. Downsides. The descendants scenario would undoubtedly have detractors. Some might argue that all AIs lack consciousness and therefore can't count as descendants. More on this in Chapter 8. Some religious people may argue that AIs lack souls and therefore can't count as descendants, or that we shouldn't build conscious machines because it's like playing God and tampering with life itself. Similar sentiments have already been expressed toward human cloning. Humans living side by side with superior robots may also pose social challenges. For example, a family with a robot baby and a human baby may end up resembling a family today with a human baby and a puppy, respectively. They're both equally cute to start with, but soon the parents start treating them differently, and it's inevitably the puppy that's deemed intellectually inferior, is taken less seriously, and ends up on a leash. Another issue is that although we may feel very differently about the descendant and conqueror scenarios, the two are actually remarkably similar in the grand scheme of things. During the billions of years ahead of us, the only difference lies in how the last human generations are treated, how happy they feel about their lives, and what they think will happen once they're gone. We may think that those cute robo-children internalized our values and will forge the society of our dreams once we've passed on. But can we be sure that they aren't merely tricking us? What if they're just playing along, postponing their paperclip maximization or other plans until after we die happy? After all, they're arguably tricking us even by talking with us and making us love them in the first place, in the sense that they're deliberately dumbing themselves down to communicate with us, a billion times slower than they could, say, as explored in the movie Her. It's generally hard for two entities thinking at dramatically different speeds and with extremely disparate capabilities to have meaningful communication as equals. We all know that our human affections are easy to hack, so it would be easy for a superhuman AGI with almost any actual goals to trick us into liking it and make us feel that it shared our values, as exemplified in the movie Ex Machina. Could any guarantees about the future behavior of the AIs after humans are gone make you feel good about the descendants scenario? It's a bit like writing a will for what future generations should do with our collective endowment, except that there won't be any humans around to enforce it. We'll return to the challenges of controlling the behavior of future AIs in Chapter 7. Zookeeper. Even if we get followed by the most wonderful descendants you can imagine, doesn't it feel a bit sad that there can be no humans left? If you prefer keeping at least some humans around no matter what, then the zookeeper scenario provides an improvement. Here, an omnipotent, superintelligent AI keeps some humans around who feel treated like zoo animals and occasionally lament their fate. Why would the zookeeper AI keep humans around? The cost of the zoo to the AI will be minimal in the grand scheme of things, and it may want to retain at least a minimal breeding population for much the same reason that we keep endangered pandas in zoos and vintage computers in museums, as an entertaining curiosity. Note that today's zoos are designed to maximize human rather than panda happiness. So we should expect human life in the zookeeper AI scenario to be less fulfilling than it could be. We've now considered scenarios where a free superintelligence focused on three different levels of Maslow's pyramid of human needs. Whereas the protector god AI prioritizes meaning and purpose, and the benevolent dictator aims for education and fun, the zookeeper limits its attention to the lowest levels: physiological needs, safety, and enough habitat enrichment to make the humans interesting to observe. An alternate route to the zookeeper scenario is that, back when the friendly AI was created, it was designed to keep at least a billion humans safe and happy as it recursively self-improved. It has done this by confining humans to a large, zoo-like happiness factory, where they're kept nourished, healthy, and entertained with a mixture of virtual reality and recreational drugs. The rest of Earth and our cosmic endowment are used for other purposes. 1984. If you're not 100% enthusiastic about any of the previous scenarios, then consider this. Aren't things pretty nice the way they are right now, technology-wise? Can't we just keep it this way and stop worrying about AI driving us extinct or dominating us? In this spirit, let's explore a scenario where technological progress towards superintelligence is permanently curtailed, not by a gatekeeper AI, but by a global, human-led Orwellian surveillance state where certain kinds of AI research are banned. Technological relinquishment. The idea of halting or relinquishing technological progress has a long and checkered history. The Luddite movement in Great Britain famously and unsuccessfully resisted the technology of the Industrial Revolution, and today, Luddite is usually used as a derogatory epithet, implying that someone is a technophobe on the wrong side of history, resisting progress and inevitable change. The idea of relinquishing some technologies is far from dead, however, and has found new support in the environmental and anti-globalization movements. One of its leading proponents is environmentalist Bill McKibben, who was among the first to warn of global warming. Whereas some anti-Luddites argue that all technologies should be developed and deployed so long as they're profitable, others argue that this position is too extreme, and that new technologies should be allowed only if we're confident that they'll do more good than harm. The latter is also the position of many so-called neo-Luddites. Totalitarianism 2.0. I think that the only viable path to broad relinquishment of technology is to enforce it through a global totalitarian state. Ray Kurzweil comes to the same conclusion in The Singularity is Near, as does K. Eric Drexler in Engines of Creation. The reason is simple economics. If some but not all relinquish a transformative technology, then the nations or groups that defect will gradually gain enough wealth and power to take over. A classic example is the British defeat of China in the First Opium War of 1839. Although the Chinese invented gunpowder, they hadn't developed firearm technology as aggressively as the Europeans, and stood no chance. Whereas past totalitarian states generally proved unstable and collapsed, novel surveillance technology offers unprecedented hope to would-be autocrats. You know, for us, this would have been a dream come true, Wolfgang Schmidt said in a recent interview about the NSA surveillance systems revealed by Edward Snowden, recalling the days when he was a lieutenant colonel in the Stasi, the infamous secret police of East Germany. Although the Stasi was often credited with building the most Orwellian surveillance state in human history, Schmidt lamented having the technology to spy on only 40 phones at a time, so that adding a new citizen to the list forced him to drop another. In contrast, technology now exists that would allow a future global totalitarian state to record every phone call, email, web search, web page view, and credit card transaction for every person on Earth, and to monitor everyone's whereabouts through cell phone tracking and surveillance cameras with face recognition. Moreover, machine learning technology far short of human-level AGI can efficiently analyze and synthesize these masses of data to identify suspected seditious behavior, enabling potential troublemakers to be neutralized before they have a chance to pose any serious challenge to the state. Although political opposition has thus far prevented the full-scale implementation of such a system, we humans are well on our way to building the required infrastructure for the ultimate dictatorship. So in the future, when sufficiently powerful forces decided to enact this global 1984 scenario, they found that they didn't need to do much more than flip the on switch. Just as in George Orwell's novel 1984, the ultimate power in this future global state resides not with a traditional dictator, but with the human-made bureaucratic system itself. There is no single person who is extraordinarily powerful. Rather, all are pawns in a chess game whose draconian rules nobody is able to change or challenge. By engineering a system where people keep one another in check with the surveillance technology, this faceless, leaderless state is able to last for many millennia, keeping Earth free from superintelligence. Discontent. This society, of course, lacks all the benefits that only superintelligence-enabled technology can bring. Most people don't lament this because they don't know what they're missing. The whole idea of superintelligence has long since been deleted from the official historical records, and advanced AI research is banned. Every so often, a free thinker is born who dreams of a more open and dynamic society, where knowledge can grow and rules can be changed. However, the only ones who last long are the ones who learn to keep these ideas strictly to themselves, flickering alone like transient sparks without ever starting a fire. Reversion. Wouldn't it be tempting to escape the perils of technology without succumbing to stagnant totalitarianism? Let's explore a scenario where this was accomplished by reverting to medieval technology inspired by the Amish. After the Omegas took over the world, as in Chapter 5, a massive global propaganda campaign was launched that romanticized the simple farming life of 1,500 years ago. Earth's population was reduced to about 100 million people by an engineered pandemic blamed on terrorists. The pandemic was secretly targeted to ensure that nobody who knew anything about science or technology survived. With the excuse of eliminating the infection hazard of large concentrations of people, Prometheus-controlled robots emptied and razed all cities. Survivors were given large tracts of suddenly available land and educated in sustainable farming, fishing, and hunting practices using only early medieval technology. In the meantime, armies of robots systematically removed all traces of modern technology, including cities, factories, power lines, and paved roads, and thwarted all human attempts to document or recreate any such technology. Once the technology was globally forgotten, robots helped dismantle other robots until there were almost none left. The very last robots were deliberately vaporized together with Prometheus itself in a large thermonuclear explosion. There was no longer any need to ban modern technology since it was all gone. As a result, humanity bought itself over a millennium of additional time, without worries about either AI or totalitarianism. Reversion has, to a lesser extent, happened before. For example, some of the technologies that were in widespread use during the Roman Empire were largely forgotten for about a millennium before making a comeback during the Renaissance. Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy centers around the Selden Plan to shorten a reversion period from 30,000 years to 1,000 years. With clever planning, it may be possible to do the opposite and lengthen, rather than shorten, a reversion period, for example, by erasing all knowledge of agriculture. However, unfortunately for reversion enthusiasts, it's unlikely that this scenario can be extended indefinitely without humanity either going high-tech or going extinct. Counting on peoples resembling today's biological humans 100 million years from now would be naive, given that we haven't existed as a species for more than 1% of that time so far. Moreover, low-tech humanity would be a defenseless sitting duck, just waiting to be exterminated by the next planet-scorching asteroid impact or other mega-calamity brought on by Mother Nature. We certainly can't last a billion years, after which the gradually warming sun will have cranked up Earth's temperature enough to boil off all liquid water. Self-destruction. After contemplating problems that future technology might cause, it's important to also consider problems that lack of that technology can cause. In this spirit, let us explore